It's time to get real with Mike Murphy. Take off the blinders and wake up to what is going on in the world. Mike is sharing unfiltered truth so you, the listener, can make your own decisions and cut through the noise of what mainstream media is saying. Mike is bringing you real news, real problems, real solutions, and real hope. Question everything. Open your mind, own your power, and get real now with Mike Murphy.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another version of the Get Real radio show. I'm your host, Mike Murphy. I got to confess, I am having the best week of my life up here in Northern Idaho. I'll do a little commercial for Northern Idaho and Lake Coeur d'Alene and Coeur d'Alene City. You know, after this show this morning, which is a pre-record, it comes on 5 o'clock for you guys. It won't be live this week, but we'll be back live next week. But I hop in a boat. I take about a 20-minute boat ride on the most beautiful lake and get off and go play golf with some great guys. So I'm just having a great time up here, and I'm so fortunate that we were able to do these shows while I'm kind of on vacation. I have some dear friends that I'm staying with here. They let me take over their kitchen this morning to do the show, and just having a great time. So anyways, we had a great show yesterday. Tons of questions that you guys sent me for Dr. Jim Willey, who will be on in just a few minutes. But yesterday I covered a story, and I did a little follow-up, and I'm going to ask Olivia, our producer, to put the link. I think the gentleman's name is Sean Atwood. And so he covered this this Judge Salas, whose son was killed, shot, whose husband was shot, is in the hospital today. And the reason why it's interesting is she's the judge for a new case related to Jeffrey Epstein. It has to do with Deutsche Bank accused of money laundering and not paying close enough attention to what Jeffrey Epstein was doing. They got a $150 million fine. And I'm going to ask Jim when he comes on, because these banks are too big to prosecute. I think that's one of the big problems. So anyways, long story short, the guy that dressed up as a delivery person and shot these people, once again, the judge of a new Epstein case related to Deutsche Bank, he commits suicide, which, you know, the whole thing, you really can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. And it's just, and they continue to get away with it. That's what's mind blowing. But a lot of people are now saying that the U.S., with, when you start shooting judges or judges' families, I mean, you know, this is Colombia, this is third world, this is Mexico. I mean, it's now here in the United States. This cabal, this global cabal, is now has a big presence here in the United States. And I think more and more people are feeling that every day. The other news story I want to just talk on real quick is Donald Trump has caved on the mask question. He's now encouraging us to wear masks. And I really don't think the president has a lot of power. Here's what I think. You know, they swear him in, he puts his hand on the Bible, he takes the oath, and then they have a parade. But before the parade, I think some guys in black suits take him into a little small room, and they show him the Zapruder tape where JFK's brains go flying out the back of his head onto the car, and his wife goes to grab them. And then they sell us that the shooter was behind him and somehow went around in the magic bullet. And so I think they say, listen, this guy didn't want to play ball with us. He didn't want to do things our way. And that's what happens. So I think gradually, I really don't think it disappoints me that where Trump is just, you know, and it's interesting early in this COVID-19, Pompeo, I think he's Secretary of State, but he was former CIA. He's up there with the group of COVID-19 team and says, well, this is a drill that's now gone live. And Trump under his breath says, I wish you would have told us, you know. So I don't know what's going on in this country, ladies and gentlemen. But we're going to have a great guest today, and we're going to get to some of these questions. So without further ado, I want to introduce and bring on the editor of the Hat Trick Letter that can be found at golden-jackass.com. I've been a subscriber for a very long time. It's less than $20 a month. If you really want to go through it and understand what's going on in the world, it takes you about a day. That's how much work this man puts in. So, Dr. Jim Willey, good morning and welcome.
Thanks for having me back so quickly. That's kind of unusual to do back-to-backs, but I love it.
Good. Perfect.
I love it. I remember exactly where we left off.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, I was talking about the John Wayne Cancer Institute. And a client of mine, pardon me, a client of mine wrote an email and said, Jim, I heard you say that you are aware of cancer cures. And I wanted to give you some more information about some real actual details. And it won't be surprising to you, but it's more detail to add to your, you know, your repertoire to put in the cabinet and bring out whenever I wish to use it. I said, okay, sounds good. Pardon me, I got, okay. He was the IT director for the John Wayne Cancer Institute. This was about 2014. I remember where I was living. That's how I date things. It's kind of strange. I was in a certain apartment, had a big view out a window, and that was 2012. And this was the next year, or 13. Okay, so this was 2014. This was before Ukraine hit. So that it's not critical, the timing, but I like to date things because this fellow went on with quite some detail. I'll try to be short about this because we don't have a lot of time. He was delivering clinical trial data on a CD-ROM to an oncologist, which is a fancy word for cancer specialist doctor. And he noticed on the wall that there were 13 pictures of what looked like a very severe rash. And it had W1, W2, W3, up to W13. And by the time it got up to about W7, 8, and 9, the rash was going away. And he said, what's on your picture there? And the doctor, without any hesitation, said, skin cancer. And the IT guy, I don't know his real name, I'm just calling the IT guy. He said, wait a minute, it looks like it's going away. And he said, oh yeah, skin cancer is one of the easiest to get rid of. We got easy cures for that. And the IT guy said, are you telling me that cancer cures are common? He said, oh yeah, sure. Cures are common, but they're not profitable. So we don't engage in cancer cures. We don't sell them. We don't provide them. We instead have the VAX protocol, which is a cancer treatment, and it's extremely profitable. And the IT guy said, you mean you could cure cancer for your patients, but you prefer to treat them on a never-ending basis, sort of? And he said, well, yeah, and that's one of the reasons I'm going to be leaving my job here. I just don't like it. I'd rather, you know, do other things and provide, you know, true aid and true treatment and cures for patients who are struggling. And the IT guy quit. He said, I quit a month later.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, let me tell you something, my story. So, you know, my late wife passed away from breast cancer in 2011. And one of the last things we did is we went to Houston to MD Anderson. And the moment I walked into those rooms, I thought to myself, there's no way they want to cure. They can't afford to cure cancer. It's too big a business. And it's interesting when the government puts a war on something, it explodes. So the war on cancer, I think it was Nixon that started that. Cancer's exploded. War on terrorism, thanks to Mr. Bush, terrorism's exploded. War on drugs, again.
Viruses.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. All right, so we got a lot of questions we got to cover from yesterday. And one listener called in and said, what's up with the price of silver? Now, I know you've been predicting this for a long time, that gold was going to go up, silver is going to go up, and you're probably thinking that should have happened 6 years ago. But now we see it, especially silver. I think when we started the show today, it was $22.38. Why now? How high do you think it's going to go? Where do you think gold's going to go?
Okay, before I get to that, let me just say a little closing comment about cancer.
Okay.
There are promised new technologies coming.
Yeah.
They're primarily on energy, but they will also include extending age and extending cancer treatment.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been saying for the last year that as the dollar approaches its final chapter, we're going to see an explosion in gold and silver. And what we saw instead was the repo explosion, where the dollar's foundation broke down. And that was last October or so. I mean, it was September, October, November, right. Just a lot of different stages to that, like extending the repo window to hedge funds, extending it to the bond swap. So I began expecting back in you know, around Christmas in January and February, I thought, something big this way comes. And then I heard from Maxwell, my guy in Central Europe, through a consult, he explained that the COMEX was pretty much destroyed and facing numerous lawsuits and was acting like a ledger function for the LBMA, the London Bullion Market Association. Okay, so he told me that all the technicals for gold and silver were looking spectacular. This was early May, and he said, look for the next couple months, something's gonna break. And I said, really, you're saying that by July? And he said, I think so, but it could be September. It could be that, you know, they shut things down for the summer. So what we're seeing now is a gigantic move, realizing that precious metals have upside, but stocks do not. Precious metals have upside, but bonds do not. The only way to get a big gain for bonds is to go deep into negative territory. And I can assure you, U.S. Treasury bonds will not go into deep negative territory, because that would require all the central banks around the world to pay the U.S. Fed and the U.S. government now to own their bonds, knowing that they're printing money like crazy on steroids, knowing that there's bond fraud everywhere, knowing that there's really creepy shit going on. Done.
Very good. So how much higher is silver going to go, in your opinion, and gold?
Okay. What's coming now, and I forecast this, I pointed out the phenomenon. Look how many times we went up to 18. We went to 17 and a half. We went to 18 and a quarter. And it was repelled. It was rebuffed. It came back down. Okay. There's an old rule, an old adage in technical trading. The more touch points you have at that resistance, the more powerful the response will be once you get above it. Because what you're doing is, suppose you have twice it hit 18 and twice it came down. There's a lot of shorting and they made money, and then they did it again and they made money. But if it happens seven times, there's a lot of people who didn't cover, who are still short, and they're wrong. So the more touch points you have at 18, the more powerful the short covering event will be. And this is multi-year within the range. So we're going to get a historic move. I think, as Maxwell said to me, we traded ideas, and I said, you know, I get the feeling that once we get past 2,000 gold, we're going to go to 3,000, and I used the term lickety split, and he knew the term because he knows a few different languages. And I said, once we get past 18 or 20 for silver, it's going to go to 30, lickety split. And he said, yes, exactly. So I think we're going to have a very exciting parade where I honestly, I'm surprised silver's leading, but there's a reason why. Sprott, Eric Sprott, just put in a $1.5 billion silver order, and he wants delivery, and he wants it yesterday, and they will not be denied because they have a large army of attorneys. Okay, this is getting to crunch time now. Sprott puts on $1.5 billion order, my guess is this is going to cause a parade. Now, the parade is for short covering. The parade is for actual orders, and it's going to get exciting. How high is it going to get? I'll go out on a limb a little bit, Mike. Okay. I think by September, we're going to see upper 20s for silver. And I don't think – I'm surprised silver's leading, but – you know, that's where the big vulnerability was. That's where J.P. Morgan was playing both sides of the fence. I think they were acting as agents for China to replace their silver stockpile that was largely depleted through a decade or more of industrial development. I think by early fall, we're going to be near 2,000 or a little bit above in gold, and looking at the short covering for that. It just builds on itself like a snowball.
So it's gaining momentum right now. We might even go up. I think in 2008 it went up to $50 silver. I mean, so that's in the realm of possibility.
That was 2011.
Okay, 11.
Yes. And that was an unusual event that it doesn't bear on today. Today, okay, You've got tremendous demand. You've got tremendous destruction of the dollar. Its integrity is gone. The Asians know it for the last 2 years. Okay.
Yeah. So, and for folks that, if you didn't see yesterday's show, we talked about, Jim says, if you're heavy in cash, put a lot of that money into silver and gold. That's your hedge. So let's talk about the dollar. And let me put it into you. Help us to understand. So, as you know, in 2015, I bought a home in Medellin, Colombia. And at that rate, I was getting, for one U.S. dollar, I got 2,900 Colombian pesos, which I thought was great because 2 years prior, $1 got you 1,800 Colombian pesos. Earlier this year, $1 would get you 4,000 Colombian pesos, and now it's around 3,400. My question for you is, what does that mean to me in, say, a year? Look, when the dollar collapses, okay, how many Colombian pesos will I get for a dollar? I mean, I know you can't predict it, but help me follow the logic of what this declining dollar is going to mean in exchange like that.
When people say the dollar is going to drop, I always ask the question, versus what?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Now you're talking about the Colombian peso. And, right. You know, when people asked me a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, or a little bit more, where you got an improvement in the Colombian peso, I said, yeah, but it could get cut in half in a matter of a year or two. Right. It doesn't take much. We're going to see a phenomenon, Mike, where people abandon their dollar and hunker down in their own home currency. I mean, it's not just hunker down in your home country for fear of the borders and asset seizures. I just had a bunch of vitamin pills that were taken at the Costa Rican airport yesterday from a friend. They call it medicines. Yeah, medicine. Yeah, vitamin is medicine. Yeah, right. Okay, so people are going to hunker down into their own currencies, but they might not be better off than the United States.
Yeah.
Now, in this climate, most countries, let's just take Italy, for example, they're opening up slowly. They might be better off than the United States. So, you know, this is not really an issue of the dollar. I know you're curious about the dollar. You have the Colombian investment. You know, you have to be concerned about, you know, how's your rent going to be provided in the Colombian property, or how's your business going to produce profitability.
Right.
You're going to have some very queer and unpredictable movements in one currency versus another. I had a consult session 2 months ago with a man from Colombia living in Canada, and very tough questions. We really don't know. I cannot tell you what the Colombian peso exchange rate will be. I do think that Colombians will bring money home. And it's not going to be a permanent phenomenon. It's going to be a temporary, like 4 to 10 or 12, 16 months. Bring it home and then be concerned about, you know, what are you going to do with it? But bring it home to make it safe. Bring your dollars to where it's familiar.
Yeah.
Okay. The big phenomenon is not so much the dollar exchange rate, but the dollar's relationship with gold, which I call, I joke with some people, I say, well, the dollar's going to drop versus what currency, or do you mean the super currency, gold?
Right. It's interesting. I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the gold against every other currency but the dollar is at an all-time high, and the dollar, we're approaching that right now.
Yes. I put this in recent hat trick letter reports. It was the Canadian dollar, the British pound, it was the euro, and it was the Chinese yuan. All these gold prices in foreign currency terms were making all-time highs. And I said, once you see the dollar form of the gold price making new highs, it's going to be a strange effect, because that might mean that you got a correction in the gold price versus the Australian dollar. Might mean you have a correction in the gold price versus the euro. We're about to see a move in the dollar, I'm sorry, a move in the euro up to 120 from the 110 range. So think of it as almost 10%. If that happens, the gold price in euro, they're going to start talking about, well, we got a correction. The correction for them is the push for us.
Yeah, gotcha. I get it. Okay, let's talk about the U.S. debt, okay? I think on the U.S. debt clock, if you go there, it's over $26.5 trillion. I'm sure you're probably familiar with Catherine Austin Fitz and Dr. Mark Skidmore audit and identifying there's another 20 to 30 trillion missing. We have all these unfunded liabilities. How long can they keep printing like this?
Until the rest of the world rejects the dollar.
And that will be when, in your opinion?
I don't really know. I think it's already started and it's going to be wider in its practice. Let me say something about Skidmore. Skidmore came out from the Michigan State University Finance Department. Maybe, I don't know if it was in, you know, whatever. He's a finance professor, whether he's operating in economics or the business school, I don't know. He came out with another report, Mike, and it's a shocker. He did more analysis, not of more departments. Remember, it was State Department, Treasury, Military, and Health and Human Services.
Yeah, right.
Right. HUD, now HHS, the home of Fannie Mae. Okay. What he did was he went deeper into the Treasury Department. He went deeper into the U.S. Treasuries, and he found 92 total trillion from what he called churning of treasuries. What they did was they redeemed it, and didn't tell how they made a new bond to cover the old bond, and it's not considered new money, it's considered slush funds to a Wall Street bank or their offshore entity. Okay, so it's 92 trillion. How long can this go on? This is gonna be extremely interesting. I found it full of intrigue that the Belt and Road Initiative sponsored by China for infrastructure major projects, you know, like trains, tunnels, airports, port facilities.
Which is basically the old Silk Road, right? Now they're building new one.
It's the old Silk Road, and it had $1.3 trillion last year in paid, completed payments.
Wow.
Okay, now, bear that in mind and look juxtaposed to the coronavirus arrival, which I think is pure fake. I got some things to comment about that if you wish later. But the point is, the Asians, in particular China, Russia, former Soviet republics, and leaking into, say, Southern Asia, you know, Vietnam, Thailand, leaking into Europe, Eastern Europe, Bulgaria, Hungary, Turkey, they were starting to expand. I've been calling it the Eurasian trade zones from the start. The Belt and Road is the avenue for construction of infrastructure that will serve the Eurasian trade zone, and it's going to hit Europe. Okay. The dollar is in the process of being rejected. We're actually bringing dollars home. We've got sort of a billboard that says, come one, come all, bring your dollar-based debt to the Fed, we'll give you dollars. Okay, when you said in the past, well, gosh, you know, Turkey is holding a lot of dollars. No, they're holding a lot of short-term treasuries. Right. Now they're gonna be holding dollars and they got a decision. What do we do with this toilet paper?
Right.
They're gonna buy gold. They're gonna buy gold, they're gonna refill their treasuries and their central bank reserves with gold, and it's gonna add it and push it to 3,000. That's how you get to 3,000. I've got a scenario of how you get to each watermark.
Okay, let me ask you this, because I'll be talking to people and I'll talk about the US debt, and they're always saying, well, China's got all this debt. What's the difference between our debt and China's debt?
Our debt is held by foreigners, about 50%.
Right.
China's debt is held internally, and therefore they can do as they wish. They can wash it, they can rescind it, they can default it, and it really doesn't affect us.
Exactly.
When we do it, we affect the whole global economy, and we isolate ourselves and really create ourselves as a rogue state.
Yeah.
Now China is going to become a rogue state for different reasons, not financial, for espionage.
Okay. Do you think China and, you know, there was the BRICS bank, but do you think, to me, it appears like the power's been in the West, the U.S., Western Europe, and it's switching more to an Eastern power now globally with China, Russia, Iran, Brazil, and the BRICS bank, kind of, which a lot of other countries have signed on to as well. How do you see that power structure, East-West, going down?
I still think the financial power is in the West, but the wealth is in the East. the financial structure and knowledge is in the West and it's not in the East. The resource wealth and the commerce, the power is in the East and not in the West. The military power used to be an nearly exclusive domain of the West, not anymore. So you've got a lot of wealth, a lot of resources, a lot of commerce, and a lot of military power building in the East, Asia. And Russia has the military might, and China has the commercial and infrastructure momentum. So what's probably going to come is compromise. And I don't really like it, but you're not going to eradicate the powerful financial syndicate in the West. You're not going to eradicate it quickly. You're going to have to force a compromise, and then you either dilute them or kill them. Mm-hmm. It's a very important point. We're in the process now of integrating them before they're killed. It's really delicate.
All the stolen money that Dr. Skidmore has identified, where is it?
Oh, okay. Imagine you're a Goldman Sachs vice president and you've got some real smarts. By the way, to be a Goldman Sachs vice president, you've got to pass sort of a rite of passage. You must complete a rite of passage, and that is to prove a $1 billion fraud. I'm not making this up. You've got to prove your criminality. It's how you prove your bone. You make your bones, you put a notch on the wall, on the post. It's from a $1 billion fraud. Okay, you don't do $1 billion frauds without involving offshore companies, offshore entities like Caribbean, you know, shells, or you know, Pacific Rim hidey holes. Okay, where does the money go? I'll just make up something that I think is probably true. I'll give you two examples. One would be a fellow at Goldman Sachs who's got experience in Indonesia, Philippines, and Malaysia. And he knows where he can funnel money, pay a small fee, move $5 billion into the country, pay $200 million to some officials, and buy himself a string of big, big commercial buildings and maybe a port facility. And he might even be a 40% owner of an airport. Okay, how did it happen? He knew somebody and he paid a fee. Okay, now there's another guy, a J.P. Morgan or a Citigroup guy, and he's got connections in Switzerland. And this guy, he knows how to use the offshore shells in the Caribbean. I'm talking about, you know, Cayman. Cayman never went away. It just changed a little bit. So he's got his shell, and he moves some money through, and he maybe even used some money transported through Cyprus, or he moved it through Luxembourg, or he moved it through Latvia, which is another very nice, convenient enclave. And he managed to buy a bunch of property in Germany and Switzerland and Netherlands and have his headquarters in a Luxembourg bank. And how did he enable all that to go through? Well, he paid off a Luxembourg official, paid off a Deutsche Bank official, and everything's happy. Okay, so it gets integrated into the economy. It doesn't get planted like in a deep hole on the moon. No, it's on planet Earth. It's being used. It's invested, and it's right in front of your face, and you can't identify it.
And the rich get richer, and the poor get poorer. So that brings up a good question for you. And I don't know the case. I just know the bigger story. But at some point in the near recent past, there was a bank, maybe Citi or JP Morgan, and the DOJ determined there were criminal charges and civil penalties, right? And they decided these people are too big to prosecute. And I think that was the day that the bank said, holy hell, we can get away with murder now. Are you familiar with that story, that case?
Yeah, sure. I think JP Morgan was at the center of that.
Okay.
And it had to do with the MERS, the mortgage electronic registry system, where they had titles on their database. Okay. Yes. It was to prevent multiple usage of a single title in more than one mortgage bond. And what they did was they used the database in order to corrupt it, to manage the corruption, not to prevent it. JP Morgan was the worst offender, but I believe the figure by about 2010, 2010 or no, 2011, maybe even more, the figure was $230 billion in fines and penalties and restitutions. And if you compare that with the total of what the commerce was within that bond fraud, it came to really just a couple percent. So it became regarded by the Wall Street gurus and VPs as a cost of doing business that was very acceptable.
Yeah, for sure. And with no jail time.
I actually had an example, and I did raw calculations. It was Wachovia. It was 07. It was before Lehman. And they're doing drug laundering with Mexico.
Yeah.
And I'm not making this up. The penalty, the whole penalty, was less than 0.2%.
Yeah.
Cost of doing business.
That mortgage thing, you know, I'm a car dealer too. And, you know, if you could fog a mirror, you know, we could get you a loan. But in mortgages, it was even worse. And, you know, no verification. It was criminal. But they covered that up again. Okay. Too big to prosecute, too big to fail. And now it seems to me, and you can talk about this, because I'm not sure how this really works, but I know the Fed and the Treasury are now one, and I think as Blackstone does all their trades. What is that?
Let me comment on Ninja for a second first.
Okay, all right.
Okay, when you're at the top of the mortgage fraud bubble, you need suckers. They lured in, unbelievably, they lured in Latinos and Blacks. And there was no requirement. It's called the Ninja Loan, N-I-N-J-A. No income, no job or assets. And they're perfect because they're going to fail, and it's a class of our society that the elites don't care about. Okay, now your question is about Blackstone.
Yeah, and the Fed and the Treasury coming together under supposedly Trump's watch or somehow.
Oh gosh, it's pretty dirty, Mike. I actually don't have a lot of information, but I do have one little story that I just put together this week for the July report that comes out this weekend. Jerome Powell was a main player at Blackstone. Then he was made the Fed chairman when it was converted under the Department of Treasury roof. So think of it as a transition that has a few steps, not one, where a lot of deals are cut, a lot of winks and nods are made and handshakes, because now you've got Blackstone, they're running the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP. I mean, I said when this all started, look for Wall Street to manage it, and look for them to take a 20% cut that includes their theft. And we got something even better. We got an adjunct to Wall Street called BlackRock. And the public will say, oh, BlackRock, well, that's not Wall Street. That must be good. No, they're dumb again. The public is dumb again. I don't know a whole lot more about how BlackRock is going to manage all this, but we need to see a list of the players because it's not just Jerome Powell. We need to see what their fees are, how much profit they've made, and where it's going.
And I will say, I covered this last week on the show, but just the regional banks, you know, with the PPP loans, they got $18 billion in fees, you know, and so God only knows what. Well, and, you know, here's the other thing people don't realize. You know, when Trump signed that, I think it's the CARES Act, right, which put $2 trillion into the, you know, the smaller economy. No one talks about the $4 trillion that went to Wall Street. That was a $6 trillion bill. And I don't know where that money comes from, but I mean, the whole thing is nuts. And why are the American people, you know, I will say one thing about this finance. It is so complicated that I don't think the average American can even follow this. I have difficulty spending a lot of time following. There's so many derivatives and so many complicated trades and puts and this and that. It's just, I think that's one reason. And so I think most Americans just put the money in 401k and hope to God it goes up. But not really understanding any of it. And it really is a rigged casino that we can't win at. Is that your opinion?
Yes, it is. And it's given the corona label and the blame. I mentioned in the last hour the shale sector, which has nothing to do with corona damage. It's all crude oil price decline. And everything is now part of the stimulus for Corona. The whole situation is ruined by Corona.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're going to see a force majeure in various forms. Okay. When I saw the CARES Act, I looked to see how much went to Wall Street, how much went to the American public through households. And I thought, okay, thousands are going to people and trillions are going to Wall Street. It's a million times larger. And you know, that if you look though, there's a contradicting point of data that's really interesting. We've got an enormous rise in the money supply. I've got a graph in the July report. Not real deep, but it's, you know, it's interesting to look at. A huge rise in money supply and a huge drop in money velocity, which means the new money is coming online, and it's going into that hole, that hole, that hole, and that pocket, and it's not going into the economy. It's going to pay off debts. Mike, it's going to pay off derivatives. I make an argument once in a while that we've seen in 10 years a reduction in the derivative volume from 1.4 quadrillion, or call it 1,400 trillion, down to 700 trillion. It's cut in half, 700 trillion in 70 months. I think we've been plugging holes at 10 trillion a month.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, I saw where I think the money supply has increased 31% this year already. And
there's nothing to stop it.
But when does inflation kick in? Well, it probably has, but when do we notice it?
I just said it's not going into money velocity. It's going into that hole, that hole, that hole, and that pocket.
Yeah.
That is the argument directly against price inflation. We're going to get price inflation, but from a different reason. It's not going to be, well, all this money is sloshing around. It's going to, you know, work its way into the system and push up prices. No, you're going to have all these phony programmed Corona tests that interfere with the supply chain, and the supply will go down and the demand will remain the same, and we're going to get higher prices. I'll give you a good example. Migrant workers in California are now obligated to go through Corona testing, and I think it's all preset because they want to harm the California farm sector. And you're going to start seeing higher prices for lettuce, tomatoes. It's already happening. It's 5% a month. It was 6% in June. It was 5% in May. Golly, is that not doubling in a year? Yeah. Okay, you know, on a compounding basis, it's almost doubling a year. So we're going to see supply interruptions, and that's where we're going to see the prices rise. It's not going to be from the new money. The new money is plugging holes.
So the new money's gone, but the middle class is being eliminated, the poor becoming poor, and the leader becoming super wealthy.
And the small business is getting eradicated.
Yes.
They only have a 40 to 60 day cash supply.
Yeah.
And you know, that's why this criminal Newsom in California comes in and without any justification, just locks it down another month. They're using fake data. And I'd love to talk a little bit about the Corona data.
Go ahead. Because obviously that's the biggest topic in the world right
now. Okay. I believe that the data for Corona cases, caught COVID is the family. COVID is all influenza now.
Right.
It'll never go away because it's always with the human species. Okay.
Exactly.
Let's just focus on Corona.
Yeah.
I believe that we got a 25 to 1, exaggeration. Let me give you two examples because these are very real. Okay, you got Joseph. He's got a really bad case of flu. He's occasionally bringing up a little bit of blood with his mucus, and he's scared because there's evidence of blood, not a lot, not a hemorrhage. So he goes to the hospital, they give him a test, say, oh, yeah, you got Corona. Well, it's not Corona. It might be SARS. It might be tuberculosis, but everything is freaking Corona. Okay, then they say to him, sit down and make a list. We want all your different contacts in the last 3 or 4 days. So he says, I got 14 of them. So for Joe and his real case of flu, not Corona, you've got 15 cases. All right, now you got Julie. Julie is a nervous housewife. She watches the news too much. I don't mean to pick on women and men, because many men are scared shitless too. But this Julie watches the news and she's scared, and she said, oh, there's a clinic down the road here, and I can get a free corona test. And naturally it comes up positive, because they all come up positive. And they say, sit on down here and give us a list of all the people you've been in contact with the last 3 or 4 days. And she said, well, I got 12. So Julie is now 13. You got 25. I'm sorry, you got 15 and you got 13. It's 28 cases, and it's only one person who's sick, and it's not corona.
Right.
28.
Yeah.
This is an innovation for wave two, Mike.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
It's brilliant. It's part of the plan, and it's intended to bring down the red states.
Yeah.
Like Florida and Texas, they've never seen so much. Florida had been filled with controversy with all these, you know, 100% positive tests. I've got two stories that are very recent. One was a man and his daughter in a clinic getting a free corona test. He gave up after 90 minutes. He had things to do, so he left. But he registered, contact information. He got an email 2 days later that his test was positive. He didn't have the test.
Right.
A couple went into it. This is both in Texas. A couple went into a line in their car, waiting in their car in line for a hospital, and they gave up. They said, well, the line's not moving. So they left. And they also got an email saying they're both positive.
Right.
Okay, this is absolute and total fraud and bullshit.
No doubt. Well, so I want to stay in the U.S., but in your newsletter, there's a very interesting part that you talk about Italy and the fact that they did autopsies, and they've come to a whole nother conclusion. So talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Italy is both the beginning and the end for the globalist elite game. They were the first place to have the cases, and not in the news was something like 10,000 Chinese workers, most of them women, who were dismissed from their factory for making clothing. The Italian government got pressure from Brussels to close them down because it was a movement against Chinese industries, and over 10,000, mostly women, were let go. And they had made frequent trips back and forth to China to visit their families, and some of them to Wuhan. And sadly, many of them turned to prostitution. Very little known about Italy is their men love prostitutes, Italian men, and they love the dark ones. They went to Cuba until the Pope made a halt to that. Okay, so you've got all these actual cases of severe, let's just call them severe flu. I believe they were SARS. And this COVID, corona, I hate the name COVID. It's the name of a project. It's not a name of a sickness.
Exactly.
The coronavirus got all through Italy, and I believe that there were some drone drops by Langley to make sure it was moved along. All you got to do is drop liquids, you know, fatty liquids, water liquids, and bring it on, and it gets absorbed into the air, and it's in droplets. And, oh, look at that fog you got over Florence. Well, that's actually a corona cloud. Okay, right. So what happened was Italy had some objection. I love the Italian people. I had four best friends in Boston before I left, and three of them were Italians. I mean, I love them. The Irish, I'm half Irish. The Irish and the Italians, they get along great. We're both very emotional. You know, what the hell are you doing? Anyway, in Italy, in the parliament, there was some serious rebellion going on. Someone tried to grab the mic and say, all of your health data is wrong. We don't have 2,000 cases. We have more like 8.
Yeah.
1,000. Yeah. 8.
Right.
And then several days later, somebody else, without any interruption, took over the mic and gave a speech about how everything is false and the Minister of Health is under bribery and all this is bullshit. Okay, then suddenly we had the news that the WHO, which is a vast Rockefeller criminal organization, gave pressure to the Italians, do not conduct autopsies. Assume, okay, this is the big word, presumed and assumed and what's the word? They call them presumptive cases of corona.
Yeah, they'll just ask you questions and then diagnose you with no test.
No test. Yeah. You're going to say, well, I got a lot of coughing. I had a fever. I had trouble breathing. They say, we're going to presume that's corona, and we are by the AMA given license to do that. And now sit down and give us a list of all your people. And you got 12 more. You got 13 cases. This is how it works. The Italians were told by the WHO, do not conduct autopsies because you're overwhelmed. You don't have the time. You don't have the resources. And the Italians said, fuck you! We're doing autopsies. And they found that it was not a virus. They found it was pulmonary thrombosis. It was inflammation of the blood cells and the blood vesicles in the alveoli, which are your sacs in your lungs. Yeah. And it was a clogging, and they noticed, wow, this is easily treated with anticoagulants and antibiotics. And the WHO is angry because they figured it out. Yeah. The corona is not a living organism. It is an RNA, DNA fragment of a protein.
Yeah. And just so I saw this somewhere, but COVID, according to this person, stands for Certificate of Vaccine ID. So who knows, but you know, it kind of fits, right? So, okay. So, you know, corona is being used for a lot of things, and they are going to put us back in place. They are going to shut us back down. But we have an interesting event is in the middle of all this, and first Tuesday in November, and that's Trump versus Biden. So I want your opinion. One, is the election going to be rigged? If it's rigged, who wins? If it's not rigged, who wins?
I have my doubts that Biden is going to be
the final
flag
guy.
Bearer.
Yeah.
The guy is too corrupt, too much of a pervert. The guy grabs women's breasts in public.
And children's.
Everywhere.
And children's.
Everywhere. Yeah. The guy is senile. He's got dementia. And I'm really not sure whether we're dealing with a clone or not. I just don't know. Okay. So there's a lot of talk. Robert David Steele believes that it's going to be Kasich.
I read that too, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, maybe. But maybe Kasich would be the vice president because Biden, oh gosh, you know, I think the Democrats realize they've lost, okay? And I don't think they're going to change Biden as a candidate. They might, but it's going to be last ditch, too late, momentum's gone. Who is this new guy? Why are you doing this? What's wrong with Biden? I thought he looked good. He's a nice looking man. You know, all these stupid reactions. I think the Democrats are focusing on 2024.
So you think Trump wins?
Yeah, I think Trump wins. I heard an independent poll, Mike. I'm not making shit up. It was 75% Trump, 11% Biden. And what's that? 14% undecided. There are more undecideds than there are pro Biden.
And that's exactly how I read it. But someone told me this the other day. I haven't verified it, but I have good reason to believe it. That Vegas has Biden minus 170 to win 100. That's a big favorite. So that's, I don't know what to make of that.
170 to win 100?
Minus $170 to win 100. And if you bet on Trump, you bet 100 to win like 140 or something. So they got Biden as a pretty big favorite in Las Vegas. Is it going to be rigged? That's the only way he wins is if they rig this election.
I think they're just dead wrong. Yeah, yeah. Let me share with you something about the NSA. I've got it on pretty good authority. First of all, the NSA issued a report in October of 2017, which was year number one for Trump. And the report said that Trump won 57% to 43, 14% landslide, the largest in history. What the NSA did was they removed the double voting, they removed the dead people voting, and they removed the unregistered non-citizen voting. And it was basically an exercise where they would perfect the method for 2020 right now. So the NSA is all over the case. Okay, here's something that most people don't think about. If California wants to rig their election or Illinois wants to rig their blue state election, they're going to have to deal with federal authorities that are put in place by Trump and hired by the NSA. It's a federal election. It's going to be federal authorities, and you don't have Obama filling the posts. You're going to have Trump filling it. So I think the NSA is going to be all over this like white on rice, like flies on shit. And what we're going to see is a fair election, and the big battle is going to be whether they allow mailed-in ballots, because that is where the Democrats specialize in their fraud.
Yeah.
It's going to be thousands of them. There were some counties, I believe in Maryland, there was some counties in Texas that had more Democrat votes than the population of the county, not the registered voter, not the registered Democrat voter, the population. The fraud is astounding. What the Democrats have done is they've blown it by showing their cards too soon.
Yeah.
I think Trump wins in a landslide. Okay, you look at the polls. You know, I gotta tell you a quick story, because I'm a statistical analyst, and one of the easiest fields of all is polls.
Right.
It's just percentages. It's difference of percentages. It is simple stuff. Yeah. But the Democrats and their corrupted polls made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
They allowed some of the polls to be vastly different. And if you've got, say, plus or minus 2%, no, I call it 3%. That's the common, you know, the confidence interval is plus or minus 3%. I could go on for 5 minutes about what that means exactly.
I'm gonna interrupt you, because we only got 3 minutes. Time flies with you. You're the easiest interview in the world. So we have 3 minutes left, and this is a subject I think we disagree on. I want you to be right. I want me to be wrong, and that's around Q. And I heard yesterday that the QAnons just got kicked off of Twitter. But what about Q? I know you kind of lean towards it's a reality. I think it's hopium. Quickly, your take on Q.
I think Q is a group of 10 different individuals. They recruited Trump. Trump did not want the job. Trump is proving that he doesn't really want the job, because he's very distracted and he's having a good time. If you don't think the Q is real, then you'd have to produce a really good case of why Trump has political ambition. And I can't find any.
Yeah.
I think the Q is 10 individual people, and their spokesman and dignity, and what do you call it? The meter, the person who meets dignitaries is Trump. And Trump occasionally says silly things because he's occasionally a silly man. I cannot find any political ambition in the man.
Right.
I cannot find any great political skill in the man. And therefore, I think it is all lying in the background, which supports the Q case.
Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing that supports the case that Trump, the way they hate this guy. Have you ever seen anything like this?
Never in my life. They're willing to kill the country in order to remove the president. But there's a reason for it, Mike. And it's because the Q and the white hats, the light forces, the alliance, whatever you want to call it, I call it Team Trump, they're arresting and ruining the trafficking system and income for the criminal elite.
Yes, yes. And it's amazing how criminal it has become. And I think it started, they really got their inroads when George H.W. Bush became vice president and then shot Reagan. So he had 8 years there, another four. Then his buddy Clinton took over. That's how I see it. How about you?
Exactly the same. We got 24 years with Clinton, Bush, Obama, but we also had 12. Not, it wasn't four, it was 12.
Right, okay. With Bush.
Yeah. Yeah, with Bush, Papa Bush. Okay, funny little trivia question. How many months was Reagan in office after inauguration before he was shot?
It was only 9 months.
Oh, no, it was under two.
Oh, under two, even boy, even worse.
Right around two. It was the end of March.
By Bush's friend's son. Okay, we're going to have to wrap. Hey, how about this, Jim? After every newsletter, you come back on and we'll do this again. How's that sound?
That sounds fine.
You're a great guest, a great guy. And if I encourage everybody, you know, to learn more about the hat trick letter, go to golden-jackass.com. It's less than $20 a month. Is a hell of a value, and I really encourage you to check it out.
Check the consult button too. It's getting very popular.
Okay, there you go. And I'll be back next week in my home studio live at 5 p.m. Pacific, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, with news stories, and hopefully we can find some solutions where we can all wake up and put an end to this criminality and go back to living a good life. Until then, have a great day.
All All right. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, Jim.
You've been listening to Get Real with Mike Murphy. We all need to wake up before it's too late. Learn to question everything, open your mind, and own your power. For more information on Mike and his work, visit MikeMurphyUnfiltered.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.